Welcome to UF Health Med Edcast with UF Health Shands Hospital. I'm Melanie Cole, and today we're highlighting sial endoscopy, understanding the benefits and limitations in treating salivary gland disorders. Joining me is Dr. Thomas Schrepfer. He's an assistant professor of head and neck surgery in the Department of Otolaryngology at the University of Florida College of Medicine. Dr. Schrepfer, it's a pleasure to have you join us today. Before we get into some of the treatments, how common are salivary gland disorders? How prevalent are they? And do we know the most common cause? Are there different types? Tell us a little bit about them.
Yeah, so first of all, thanks for having me. Happy to be here and answer any questions you may have. So the occurrence about salivary gland disorders, that's actually a really good question. I'm not sure if I can give you like a certain number. It depends on what type of salivary gland disorders you're looking at. So the ones I treat, I can just tell you out of my practice, you either have an obstructive disorder like a stone or a blockage so that the gland actually doesn't drain anymore and you develop symptoms. And the other big category would be an inflammatory process. Like we all know mumps or an infection in a child, but you can have also immunomodulated or inflammatory processes later on as an adult that can cause salivary gland disorders. So the two most common appearances, either there's an anatomical obstruction that's causing an issue or an inflammatory process in your gland that gives you symptoms.
Okay, so based on whether it's inflammatory or obstructive, if a patient goes to see primary care, what are the symptoms? What are they looking for? Does the face swell up? What happens?
So first, it can be kind of difficult to distinguish these two. So stone, you assume a stone is only one-sided. With humans, we're mostly symmetric. And so we have the two big parotid glands. These are in front and below your ear. They're really big glands. They kind of make big part of your cheek. Then there's another gland, it's called submandibular gland. It's below your jawline. These are the glands that usually affected with these issues. So let's assume we have an obstruction like a stone. It's more common in the so-called submandibular gland. And as we all know, we produce more saliva when we either think of food or when we're actually eating or chewing on something. So if you have an obstruction or a stone, something blocking it, you may feel a swelling under your jaw. People would describe it like a golf ball blowing up when you eat. And then if you're lucky, it goes back down once you're done eating, you can massage it. These stones, they can be anywhere between the opening, which is right under your tongue, or deep in the gland. And a lot of stones, they develop slowly and they're small and they can be floating. And that's why when you eat, they may float towards the exit of the gland or the duct. And then that's when the gland swells up and you have the symptoms. These stones, if you massage your gland, they may just come out. It may look like a little rice corn coming out under your tongue, or it may get stuck there and you can actually see and feel the swelling. The parotid glands can also develop stones, but they're rare and they usually remain smaller. They're also less symptomatic. So if you go to a primary care and you have like on and off swelling, eat or the food intake related under your jaw, then I think it makes sense to think of a stone and obstructive disorder. So most of the time you have the swelling, but you don't see or have symptoms of an infection. Symptoms of infection would be the usual like warmth, erythema, tenderfold swelling under the jaw, and pus draining from the ductal system. So those are the ones you really want to do the so-called MASH protocol, which means massaging, warm compresses, and an antibiotic. And then once it calms down and symptoms may or may not come back, you want to think of obtaining some imaging. I'm a big fan of ultrasound as a first modality, just because it shows you really the actual texture and the actual structure of the gland. It can already distinguish between an obstruction versus maybe something else going on, like an autoimmune disorder, an inflammatory process. Although if you really think of a stone, you want to know the extension of the stone and the location of the stone, then a CT scan obviously is better because it shows you the density, because it highlights dense structures like a stone. When you move on to the autoimmune disorders, there can be a whole range of symptoms, because if it's autoimmune related, you have to think of it may not affect all the glands or at least a couple or a pair of glands. Those patients may have a constant swelling but not much pain. They can just have like a swelling in front of the ears affecting the parotid glands or submandibular glands. And if it goes on for a certain time, they may develop systemic symptoms such as dry eyes, dry mouth, and that's when you really want to think of an autoimmune-related disorder like Sjögren's disease.
Thank you so much, Dr. Schrepfer. So let's talk about sial endoscopy. Tell us what it is, how it works as a minimally invasive technique for treating these disorders we're discussing here today.
A sinoscopy, it's a really interesting intervention or technique that was actually developed in Geneva by Francis Marshall. The idea of putting a fiber that you can look through the ductal system into the gland has been around for a while, but then Dr. Marshall, he really kind of brought it to a point where he was able to visualize through the gland without having an open surgery and performing through the duct or through the working channel in the scope of procedure. So he was the first to visualize a stone through the duct, inside the duct, and then take it out through a little basket. So basically, picture a tiny straw, only maybe 1.2 millimeter in diameter, that you can actually insert into your ductal system. And then at the end of that straw, you can hook up a camera, and whatever you see through the straw is visualized on a screen in front of you. There is mainly three different sizes. There's a company out there called Dors from Germany. They make those scopes. There's a diagnostic scope. It's only 0.89 millimeters in diameter. Does not have a working channel. So all you can do is actually just go into the duct and see what's going on. Then the next step up would be the 1.1 or the 1.3 millimeter scope. The nice thing about those, they have a side port. So you can insert a small wire or even a tiny basket. So if you see a fragment or a small stone in front of you, if you're lucky, you can catch it and pull it out. Then the next step up will be the 1.6 millimeter scope. I hardly ever can use that scope just because it's almost too big for every duct that we have. Unfortunately, it's the only scope that can accommodate a laser fiber. So every now and then I try laser lithotripsy, fragment the stone with a laser. That's when I have to go up to the 1.6 millimeter scope because only that scope has a side port that's big enough to accommodate that wire.
That's so cool. Dr. Schröpfer, what an exciting time in your field. This is really exciting and fascinating interventional equipment. I mean, it's new. We haven't heard much about it. So speak about the benefits for the patients. And as you were describing the procedure so very well and the technique, the benefit for the provider. How is this making it so much easier for you to identify these things than, say, 20 years ago?
I think you can divide between benefit for the patient, benefit for the provider. So the benefit for the patient, if you have a small stone, you can hopefully cure them by going through the duct, find the stone, take the stone out and solve the obstruction. The patient is happy again. In the old days, worst case scenarios, those patients, they were symptomatic. So what would you do? You take out the gland. So pretty invasive open surgery to solve, honestly, a small problem, right? A tiny stone. So it's a benefit for the patient. The benefit for the provider, obviously, you make a patient very happy. Reimbursement is extremely poor. So that's why there's not many people out there that actually offer the procedure, just because there is no specific code. So providers don't get paid. So the only way to get paid for the procedure is by using different codes or argue with the insurance that, hey, you should pay me like I take out the gland because I do a gland sparing procedure. The other problem, the equipment. The equipment's extremely fragile. It doesn't take much, like, it's so flimsy and small, a little bend too much and it breaks. And each scope is $15,000. It's extremely fragile, difficult to handle, expensive material for a procedure that you probably, as a private provider, don't get reimbursed enough to actually make a living and pay all the costs, like the overhead costs. So that's for obstructive disorders. Obstructive disorders, they can be extremely gratifying. If you find the right patient with the right stone, right size, you can cure them. If you have an inflammatory process, unfortunately, there's no such thing because we cannot cure an underlying autoimmune disease or Sjögren's, but they get a lot better, especially children. So even children, they can have recurrent inflammatory issues with their glands. It's called JRP or juvenile recurrent peritonitis. Starts in early childhood, can go on until they're teenagers. And those kids, they can really suffer. They may receive multiple rounds of antibiotics, steroids. They require a lot of workup. And the tissue, the gland, can take a lot of damage if you don't do anything for years. Literature and studies show that with silent endoscopy, so what we do, we go into the gland. It's usually, again, parotid gland, just by flushing with saline and irrigating it. And at the end, I usually have a big glove of Kenalog. So at the end, we flush it with a steroid. There's more than 80% of these kids, they do well. So like, you do the procedure once and more than 80% of the children, they basically don't have symptoms anymore.
Wow. That's really incredible. You've given us so much to think about. Tell us a little bit about advancements, innovations in silent endoscopy that are currently in development. And you mentioned the equipment itself. Dr. Schröpfer, what do you want to see happen with this type of procedure? I mean, obviously for insurance to recognize it a little bit more clearly, because it does have such benefits. But if you were to look for the future and say, as a head and neck surgeon, I would like to see, tell us what that is.
I mentioned the laser lithotripsy, like where you can actually insert a laser fiber and fragment the stone. So that's off-label. You really have to tell the patient, hey, it's off-label use. So there's no official wire or laser approved for that. We just all use the equipment provided by urology. So the whole technique kind of was copied from urology, like the cystoscopes in urology gave the idea to develop the silent endoscopes. And same with the laser fiber and the actual laser. So we used the Holmium-Yack laser and the fiber from urology. It works. Works actually really well. The problem is you end up with two issues. Number one, again, the duct is super small and fragile, so there is almost always thermal damage because of the laser. And if you fire the laser too close to the endoscope, it may even damage the endoscope. And then the other thing, you end up with lots of these little fragments that you have to catch and flush out at the end. So if I could wish something, obviously, that it would be officially approved, that there is a guideline developed, or maybe even a fiber that is like, okay, hey, that's officially approved for silent endoscopy. Other than that, we all know technology is advancing, so hopefully one day we don't need the optical fibers anymore. So maybe one day we can be a super tiny microchip at the tip, like right now the iPhone cameras or other cameras, that we can have tip on the chip scope instead of the fibers, so it's less likely to break the scope. I guess that would be a nice advancement in technology.
This was very interesting conversation. Dr. Schrupfer, thank you so much. Your knowledge is so fascinating, and you have so much of it, your expertise in this topic that not that many people know about. So this was really, really interesting. Thank you for such a lively discussion. And to learn more about this and other healthcare topics at UF Health Shands Hospital, please visit innovation.ufhealth.org. Or to listen to more podcasts from our experts, you can always visit ufhealth.org/medmatters. That concludes today's episode of UF Health Med Edcast with UF Health Shands Hospital. I'm Melanie Cole. Thanks so much for joining us today.